Welcome, everyone. My name is Rick Spencer. I'm a vice president with HeatBiz. I'd like to thank you for joining us in the third of our series of webinars on PPP forgiveness. We've been co-hosting these with our partners at Suncrest Bank. And so we'd like to do a welcome real quickly and thank them for their participation and their leadership over the past two webinars, which are on our website and available to listen and watch. In addition, this webinar will be recorded and will be available to be shared afterwards. We'll also be talking about how you can submit questions for our question and answer period throughout this webinar. So Ian, we'll go to the next slide and thank again our partners, Suncrest Bank. So we are proud to be working with Suncrest Bank, who has provided, you know, hundreds of PPP loans for small businesses. Like I said, their leadership has been tremendous in this area. They started in 2008 during a previous financial crisis, and they've really stepped up as far as supporting small businesses in the greater Central Valley through this process. After these welcoming remarks, we'll go through a review of the latest guidance. As you probably know, we've had to reschedule this final webinar based on new guidance that was issued with the PPP Flexibility Act, which changed some of the forgiveness rules and some of the application process. So we want to take a walk through some of those changes, as well as look at the revised application and help you understand the steps and the requirements for the application process. Finally, in our review today with this webinar, we'll be able to go through some frequently asked questions that we've received, some of the priority ones and the top received questions. So we'll review those as well. And then we will have an open Q&A portion at the end of the webinar. So if you haven't participated in these webinars, at the bottom of your screen in the Zoom window, you'll see a Q&A icon. And by clicking on that Q&A icon, you can submit a question. We will save the questions till the end. And if we can't answer your question live during the webinar, we will follow up afterwards as we have every attendee's email address. So we can follow up afterwards, provided that you don't submit the question anonymously. So keep that in mind as you submit your questions. So with that review of our agenda, I'd like to introduce our panelists for today's webinar, beginning with Ian Dewart, Vice President of Investments at HeatBiz. Ian has tremendous experience from the finance world, as well as being a CFO and a venture capitalist. So we're excited to have Ian's perspective and knowledge in this space to help cover this content. We also have some of our new partners joining us from Moss Adams, Jasleen Mann, who's a senior manager for assurance services, and Chris Ruin, who is a tax partner with Moss Adams. Jasleen and Chris are both in the Sacramento-based office for Moss Adams, and they've been supporting several clients with questions about the PPP forgiveness process and the loan regarding tax and assurance and finance questions. So they're also both active with small businesses and other businesses in the area. So we're excited to have both their expertise and support. And then finally, we have Elizabeth Zanotti, who's Director of Marketing with Suncrest Bank. And Elizabeth will be answering questions specific to Suncrest Bank as we go through the content today. So without further ado, I'd like to give the floor to Ian and our panelists to review all these exciting and simple updates that we have regarding PPP forgiveness. Thanks, Ian.
Great. Thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. And welcome, everyone. For those of us, those of you who return, thank you for coming back to the third webinar. And for those of you who are new, I hope we can answer all of your questions, at least to the best of our ability. As you all know, the PPP forgiveness program has been a bit of a moving target. even in our own planning for this webinar, we had originally intended that our third webinar would be dedicated entirely to frequently asked questions that we received. But because the guidance has changed yet again, we're going to spend about the first half of the webinar just going through what has changed in these latest revisions and how you can navigate those. So as Rick said, if you do have questions as we go along, please use the Q&A button at the bottom of the Zoom screen and not the chat. And as we see those, we will keep them in mind and at the end of the webinar, try to cover those. So let's jump into what's new. This latest revision is pretty extensive. The most important things that came out of it, the covered period, in other words, the time from the moment the cash hits your bank account to the deadline when you have to spend it to apply for forgiveness, is now 24 weeks versus 8 weeks. If you already have a PPP loan, it's going to be your option whether to choose an 8-week or 24-week period. Second big moving piece, the payroll threshold is now 60% instead of 75%. Originally, you would need to spend at least 75% on payroll. Now it is at least 60%. So a little bit easier to hit that threshold, which is good. A lot of people have seen hours reduced because of the virus. So target's a little easier to hit. Four minor things that have changed. The payment deferral period now begins when the SBA determines what portion or all of your loan will be forgiven. Before it was a straight 6-month deferral. Because a decision may take more than 6 months, that is also in the borrower's favor, most likely. New loans are now termed at 5 years instead of 2 years. If you have an existing 2-year loan and you would like to extend it to 5 years, that can be done as long as the bank agrees to it. Another big change, there is now an easy application form along with the regular 3508 application. We'll dive into who can use that and what the differences are shortly. And the last item to recognize is that the guidance now allows a little more latitude for those who have had to slow down business activity just to meet with regulations. Okay. So next we'll go to what has been clarified because in the last webinar we noted there were a number of things that weren't quite clear and what still isn't clear. The date where your forgiveness application is due is now clarified. You will have 10 months from the end of your covered period to submit the application. Second thing that is clearer, this came up in a lot of questions we received. For those of you who are self-employed, some of the calculations around full-time equivalent didn't seem to make any sense. So the easy form clarifies a bunch of those. If you're self-employed, may not make sense to keep track of your own hours. So that has been simplified in the easy form. And explicitly, gasoline used for business vehicles is now an eligible utility expense. Some of the things that are not clear at this point, the term transportation is defined as a utility, but outside of gasoline, I'm saying gasoline, it's the fuel, whichever fuel your vehicles are running on. What other types of transportation are eligible utilities? The next point, some of the items in payroll are still unclear, particularly workers' comp has been a question we've received a number of times. We don't believe that we'll be eligible, and some timing questions. Next, the definition of utilities is still a little bit fuzzy. We know for sure utilities that everyone would generally accept as utilities, such as electricity and water, are certainly acceptable. But the AICPA recommends that if there is any question, confirm the expenses with your bank during the forgiveness application process. And the last thing we don't know is what changes are still to come. You know that we don't really get any warning on announcements for when changes are expected. They just kind of show up. So we expect that there will be some more guidance and changes to the program as we go along. And Chris and Jasleen, is there anything you'd like to add on the new program and the changes?
You know, I think you've highlighted the key points here. Obviously, there's some clarity and there's still some unknowns. And I think you've hit on those key points here that there's certain aspects we don't know. And when in doubt, definitely consult with your bank to see what their position is on certain things. But I think you've hit all the key points right now.
I agree, Ian. Nothing to add at this point.
Okay, so I'm just taking a deep dive in some of the bigger changes. The 8-week versus 24-week covered period and the application due date. So some of this is information we covered last time. The covered period is the period that begins when the funds are deposited into your account, and the period ends 8 weeks later or 24 weeks later. For new loans, it's automatically 24 weeks. If you have an existing loan, you have the option. You can choose 8 weeks or you can choose 24 weeks, and you don't need to make that decision until you apply for forgiveness. So you have an option there, which is nice because it may be advantageous to run the numbers using both periods and see which is best. But it is important to note that because you choose a 24-week period instead of an 8-week period, it doesn't mean your loan size eligibility increases. It doesn't give you the opportunity to increase your loan size by 3x to match the time period. The application is due 10 months after the end of your covered period. And that is the latest you can apply. You can apply for forgiveness anytime after your covered period ends, but we would note it's important to make sure your bank is accepting applications. Many banks are not accepting applications at this time as they get their systems in place to handle these. So the payroll threshold, big change. And this is a minimum. So formerly, the minimum you needed to spend on payroll to be eligible for forgiveness was 75%. That is now 60%. Important to note that partial forgiveness is allowable. Therefore, if you only spend 50% on payroll, that can still be forgiven. However, keep in mind that the non-payroll expenses cannot exceed 40%. So in that case, it would be 10% of your loan that is not forgivable.
And one of the things too, I've been asked with some of my clients is you know, they had been operating under the old 75% rule when they were walking through some of the mechanics before they came out with the 60%, and now they said, oh no, now it's got to be 60. And so the key thing to point out is 60 is the minimum. So I mean, if you're spending 75% or more on payroll, that's still totally fine. You're still in good shape. It's just 60 ultimately is a minimum. It's not a new threshold. It's just a lowering of the bar. And so it's meant to be taxpayer friendly.
Absolutely. And if you spend 100% on payroll, that is fine as well. And you'll probably reduce your paperwork burden. So the question comes up. There's two forms now. One is an easy form and the other is the regular form. The question is, which one should you use? How do you know if you're eligible for the easy form? To figure that out, there is a separate document away from the form, and I see someone is asking how they get the forms. If you Google PPP forgiveness application form, the links come right up. They should be at the top of your results. So there is the form 3508, which is the regular form, the 3508EZ, which is the shorter form, and then separate documents. So keep that in mind. If you're looking at these forms, they seem a little unclear. The instruction documents can be found as separate PDFs. So let's dig into the question. And by the way, links to all of these forms and the instructions are on the HaneyBiz/PPP forgiveness website. So you can always check those out there. The question though, which form should I use, the regular or the EZ? So on the EZ instructions, you will find these checkboxes. And I've simplified the language here. But if you can check any one of these boxes, you may use the EZ form, which will save you a bit of time and effort. And the first option, if you are self-employed and you have no employees, check the box. You can definitely use the EZ form. For the second and third choices, the first line is the same. So there's two criteria for each box. And the first one is, if you did not reduce salary or wages of any employee by more than 25%, you're halfway there. And the second criteria for box number two is that you also did not reduce reduce the number of employees or the average hours. So box number two, you didn't cut pay, you didn't cut hours. Great, you can go ahead and use the EZ form. One thing to note about that. Some people are in a situation where they did not intend to reduce headcount. In other words, maybe somebody was let go and you tried to rehire that person and you were not able to get them back. They said no. There is some safe harbor here for that. If you can prove that you tried to rehire the person, it will not be held against you that the headcount was down, so you may still be able to use the EZ form. And even more latitude, if you were trying to fill a role and you couldn't find an applicant who was qualified to fill that role, that won't be held against you either. So the government is not trying to mandate that you make a bad hire. So keep that in mind. You may still be eligible to check box number two, even if headcount was reduced. And then last one, number three, we alluded to this earlier, that the government is giving some latitude for the fact that regulations made it hard to operate. So if during the covered period you were not able to sustain your business activity because regulations about social distancing or sanitation made it impossible for you to maintain the same business activity, you can check box number three. And keep in mind, you will need to provide some documentation for that. Okay. Since this is new.
Ian, I'll just interject here on the last slide. I wanted to remind everyone. So as Ian mentioned, that if you offer to rehire a laid off employee and the employee declines, then that employee does not have to be included in the loan forgiveness reduction calculation. However, to qualify for this exception, you need to have the documentation for it. So you should have a written offer of rehire, as well as documentation of the employee's rejection of that offer. And you should also, and the employees and the employers should also keep in mind that in this instance, it's likely or it's possible that the employee who rejected the rehire offer, they might become ineligible for continued unemployment compensation. So just something to keep in mind.
So Absolutely. Thank you. And on the next slide, we're just going to examine in that third checkbox the opportunity to use the EZ form if your operations were impacted by the regulation or rules about social distancing, sanitation, or other customer or employee safety. So what I did here is this is the text directly from the instructions, and I've highlighted it to make it a little bit easier to read. When you remove a lot of the extraneous text, it simply says the borrower was unable to operate at the same level of business activity due to compliance with requirements related to the maintenance or standards of sanitation and social distancing or any other work or customer safety requirement. So that's great. I think this is going to apply to a lot of people. The thing to keep in mind is if you do check that box, you will need to keep on file some documentation to support that case. There isn't a lot of guidance on what that documentation actually is. So you may need to sort of build your own case to prove or to be able to show proof that the regulations did prevent you from operating. Okay. And so now, as I said originally for webinar number three, we were going to focus on aggregating the most frequently asked questions that came in from webinars one and two and through our website. So we're going to do that now in an abbreviated form. We've got seven questions that popped up a few times, and we'll try to clarify those for you. So this after the latest guidance came out, a number of people asked, why wouldn't everyone just use the 24-week covered period instead of the 8-week covered period? Complicated question, because businesses vary so much. And we do recommend that because everyone who has an existing loan has the option to use the 8 or the 24-week, that you analyze the numbers both ways. We have found that, the reason for the extension was the 8-week period was fairly short. It happened during a slowdown, and some businesses found they weren't able to use the proceeds quick enough. So rather than have all that money paid back, it did make sense to extend the period. But keep in mind that if you do use the longer 24-week period, you're definitely extending beyond today into the future. We don't know what will happen in the future. But if you do choose the longer time period, you will need to maintain that 75% threshold on maintaining full-time equivalent and also not cutting pay. So there's additional risk in the future that you may not be compliant with those regulations. So we do recommend that you take the option. Wait till the end of the 24-week period if you haven't spent all the money already, and analyze both scenarios. Keeping in mind there may be a cost if part of the loan is not forgiven. It is accruing interest at 1%, which is probably negligible, but it is something to keep in mind. And then, Jasleen, I don't know if you wanted to weigh in on note number two that we talked about before this webinar, which is if you're keeping an eye on your balance sheet, you may have other considerations.
Right. Sure, I can chime in on that. So for GAAP purposes, so if you are following generally accepted accounting principles, any PPP loan until it is forgiven is likely to be listed as a liability on your balance sheet. So that's something to keep in mind when you're considering when to apply for forgiveness, especially if you are planning on applying for additional loans or if you're planning to increase maybe your line of credit limits, because it might make it more difficult to obtain additional loans when you have this PPP liability on your books as opposed to you receive forgiveness for it and it's eliminated from your balance sheet and you don't have any existing debt or a lower amount of existing debt. The other thing to keep in mind is if it would impact any of your loan covenants. So you might have covenants that require you, that require a certain amount of, you know, say assets to liabilities ratio or liabilities to equity ratio that could be impacted by this PPP loan. That's not to say that having this is on your balance sheet is necessarily going to be a detriment, but it should be a conversation you should be having with your lenders if you are looking to receive additional financing or if you have covenants in place.
Ian, there's a couple of questions, actually several questions on this that I'll just bring up now. Because I think it's relevant. And that's, you know, let's say you did pick the 24-week period, but after 10 weeks, you know, you've been able to use all the funds. Can you apply for forgiveness then? Or do you have to wait since you chose 24 weeks for the full 24 weeks, including staying at those levels that you referenced?
That's a great question. And I believe it's going to be an either or. You can use the 8-week period or the 24-week period. But not a time period that falls in between. And the reason for this is the test for maintaining full-time equivalent, maintaining wages, is based on one of those two periods, but not sort of a self-defined period.
So once you've selected the period, you can't apply for forgiveness until that period has been completed. Is that correct?
That's a bit circular. For people who have existing loans, you won't be selecting your period until you're filling out the forgiveness application. So what that means is, you can't select your 24-week period early, I think is the practical answer there.
But I think one of the themes here we're talking about today is there's not a huge rush to filing the application and committing to an 8 or 24-week period. I think it's if you have an 8-week period, you absolutely are confident that you have spent all the money, you meet all the bells and whistles with payroll, you may want to just be done with it and apply for forgiveness, but you have any doubt in your mind, it's not a rush, you know. Don't apply for it now, sit back and wait, analyze the numbers, and then only when you apply, then choose the 8 or 24 week, whichever gives you the better answer. So I don't think you have to commit to it up front. It's not until you apply, you have to commit, and you'll hopefully know which is the better answer at that time.
Yeah, that's right. And to clarify, I see a question in the Q&A. Loans that came out early, you were told at that point that it was an 8-week covered period, but that is not locked in now. It will be your choice when you apply for forgiveness. Okay, I'm going to proceed to question number two. And I know this was the first question that hit our Q&A chat. What are the tax implications of PPP loan forgiveness? Chris is the expert, so I'll cede the floor to you, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Ian. So for tax purposes in general, for most loans, if a loan is forgiven, that is what's called debt forgiveness income, and that is usually taxable income. In this case, the PPP loans were reduced, and clear guidance was provided that forgiveness of these loans would not be considered debt forgiveness income, not taxable income. However, what comes with that under the current guidance is that the expenses that you've incurred for payroll, utilities, et cetera, that allow you to qualify for the loan forgiveness are also not tax deductible. So in a way, it's kind of a tax neutral concept. And there are some bills that are in play that are trying to allow for the expenses to be deductible and not have the loan forgiveness as income. But currently, this is the rule. Quite frankly, this applies or follows consistently with a lot of other tax principles that are in this general area. Generally, you can't deduct expenses that relate to tax-free income. So in the end, I expect this to be the answer. It's worth noting that California has not adopted this rule. In other words, the debt forgiveness is taxable for California currently, and therefore the expenses are deductible that are related to the loan forgiveness. So again, you have an inverse treatment here. For those that might file in other states other than California, each state is different in terms of whether or not they adopted the federal rules or not. So you definitely want to check with your CPA on if you do file in other states and how this might impact your taxability in other states besides California.
Okay, great. And just a follow-up question that came up on that. Chris, when at what point does that income become taxable? When does it convert to taxable income?
I think when the loan is forgiven. I'm sorry, is that the question? When is it? When is it? Yeah. I don't know what the question
exactly.
Is,
that is the question.
Okay, so when the loan is determined to be forgiven, would be the situation where, Jasmine can chime in, but for book or financial statement purposes, that's going to be treated as income on your books, and we would treat that as non-taxable income for tax. And it's going to happen in the tax year in which the loan is forgiven. So if that's in 2020, that would be the event. If it's in 2021, that would be the event. That is my expectation of how that would work.
Right. I would agree with that. And for anyone on a non-standard end of year, if you carry the loan over year end, that would be non-taxable. It would be taxed in the next year. Okay. Moving to question number three. This one is a little tricky. Which components of employee compensation are eligible for classification as forgivable? And it would have been nice if the whole paycheck would have just simply been forgiven. But there are a few things that were called out as not eligible for forgiveness. So you can see, the rule of thumb is essentially if proceeds are going to the employee, they are forgivable. The employer portion of FICA and Medicare are not. We'll say the one thing that doesn't fit that rule of thumb, you'll see the last item on the left. State unemployment and disability insurance do appear eligible. So it's probably best to consult with your payroll provider if you have one running payroll separately. We think that most payroll providers will be providing reporting and documentation to help you get through the math on this section. And just pointing out, because it was a separately asked question many times, workers' comp, we do not believe that will be an eligible payroll expense. It's not clear. We're not 100% on that, but we're leaning that way at this point. Okay, question number four. When is the application due, and should we file as soon as possible? So the forgiveness application is due at a maximum 10 months after the end of the covered period. So as Chris said, no rush. And we suggest that you wait because the number of revisions to guidance have been numerous, and we expect there will be further revisions. And generally, the revisions have been borrower friendly. So time is on your side with a big 10-month window. It might be good to sit on this for a while and see what happens. That said, if you do have a portion of the loan that turns out it's not going to be forgiven, there will be a 1% interest charge annually on that unforgivable balance. But assuming that you can get fully forgiven, that 1% interest will also be forgiven. And the last point here, make sure your bank is ready to receive the application. So we suggest having a conversation with a representative before you submit the application. One of the things that is mandated by the law is that once you submit an application, the bank has 60 days to move that application on to the SBA. And because this process is all being developed in real time, you want to make sure that the bank is ready to process that and get it out to the SBA so that, you know, the application is fully and properly reviewed and you're not at risk of something going wrong simply because it was rushed.
So just to add, you know, again, if there's any question about whether or not you're going to have the loan fully forgiven, you're running the numbers, you're not totally clear if it's going to be fully forgiven or not, definitely advocate waiting. More guidance could come out. Ultimately, the 24-week model might work better for you. Again, don't rush. If you have any question in your mind about some portion of it not being forgiven, just wait and see if additional guidance or potentially the 24-week option might be give you a better answer. And the worst case is ultimately 1% of what's forgiven would be interest you'd have to pay, but that's really the case anyway. So it seems like there's only an upside really for the most part in terms of waiting.
Agree. Okay, question 5. What documentation is required for the forgiveness application? Okay, so we've got 4 items listed here, and it's important to note that items 1, 2, and 3, this is a document package that you'll actually submit to the bank when you fill out the application, and it is the payroll records, you know, showing how much was spent on payroll and proof that the full-time equivalent number was kept above that 75% threshold or not, but proving out the numbers that are on the application. And then it's the non-payroll records, which is essentially the utility payments or mortgage interest payments that were made. And it's beyond payment and numbers. It's also proving that those relationships existed prior to February 15th. You may recall you can't submit a utility for a new service, something that was put in place after February 15th. And then item number 4, these are documents that you need to keep on file, and you're required to keep them on file for 6 years after the loan is forgiven or repaid, that do not need to be submitted to the bank, although they may be requested by the bank or the SBA at some point. And in short, this is support for all the numbers on the application. They just want to prove that none of these are made up, and they can all be tied back to an outside document. Okay, question number 6. This occurred a few times, particularly for those seasonal employers whose headcount goes up and down, you know, such as agriculture. What do I do if my loan size is incorrect? Yeah, it's a tough question because it hasn't really been addressed anywhere. But consensus is there won't be a penalty for any miscalculations. The language used has been that these loans were made with best efforts. So we believe there won't be any punitive effects for having a loan that is incorrectly sized. From a practical standpoint, what do you do? What do you do if your loan is too big? You have a loan and it's available to you at 1%. So you can keep that in mind. Even if you can't spend into forgiveness, the balance will convert to a loan. And if you don't want a loan, we suggest that the easiest thing to do is set that money aside and repay the bank and pay down the balance and get that debt off your balance sheet. If the loan is too small, there's less visibility into a good answer. We don't know if there's recourse available, but we do suggest that you have a conversation with the bank and see what is available, which may change, you know, from business to business. Okay, and the last of our facts, I received an EIDL loan or an EIDL loan, which is forgivable. how does that affect PPP loan forgiveness? And the rule of thumb here is that you cannot have money forgiven from both programs. So if you received, let's say, $10,000 in an EIDL loan and it was granted so that you did not need to repay it, that $10,000 will be reduced from the forgivable amount of your PPP loan. Okay, so that, and you'll see that on page one of your worksheet. So the final on the forgiveness application, just to reiterate, there's not a rush. It's actually in your favor to go slow, see if there is further guidance or changes on the way. If you wait and the entire loan is forgiven, all the interest will be forgiven as well. So again, in your favor. And lastly, make sure you check with your bank before submitting an application to make sure that they are ready for it and it will be processed timely and correctly. Chris, Jasleen, anything to add before we wrap this up and move into Q&A?
No, just from a tax perspective, I would be sure that you're talking with your tax preparer about this. Make sure that you're on the same page with them. Make sure they're looking at your books right now and giving you guidance on where you think that any impacts this might have on your taxable income, estimated tax payments. We have some extensions due next week for individuals. If any of that stuff has impacted by any of this, please talk with your tax preparer and make sure that you're in a tax preparer on the same page with how this might impact you.
Hey, Rick, guide us through Q&A, please.
Great. Well, thank you, Ian, Jasleen, and Chris. One of the questions I saw that I think is interesting, but especially for public agencies or nonprofits relevant, how do you handle fiscal years that end in June? So if maybe some of the funds were used in the previous fiscal year, but the forgiveness happened in the next fiscal year, any guidance that you have on that situation?
So I can speak from a financial statement presentation point of view, and then Chris can chime in on the tax implications. So like I mentioned earlier, as far as your financial statements go, when you receive the funds, you set it up as a liability, so similar to any other loan. So it doesn't, your year end doesn't really impact how you account for the transaction. So regardless of whether you have a June 30th year end or a December 31st year end, you would in either scenario very likely have a PPP loan payable set up on your books, and then you would record the expenses as you would normally record your payroll or utilities. And then in the following year, when you do get the forgiveness or you're pretty sure that the loan is going to be forgiven, at that point, you would record other income. And in your, you know, note disclosures or to the readers of your statements, you would just explain to them that that other income is arising from forgiveness of the PPP loan. And since this is such a common scenario for small businesses, I think most users of the statements would be well aware of what that amount is.
And so on the federal tax side, similar, I think you would you need to wait until the point in time where you determine how much of the loan is forgiven. So if your end is June 30th and that hasn't been determined at this point in time, it would sit as a liability. You would not have income recognition or anything like that. In the following tax year, when it's determined that you would have the loan forgiven, again, as Jasleen mentioned, it would be income for your financial reporting purposes. It would not be income for tax reporting purposes. The tricky area here is, as I had mentioned, the expenses that you used to have the loan forgiven would also not be deductible. And there's a potential that some of those expenses were incurred in your prior fiscal year And you may have deducted those. And so my expectation is, there's not clear guidance on this, but my expectation is you would have to recapture those expenses in that subsequent tax year so that the loan forgiveness and the corresponding expenses were accounted for consistently in the same tax year that you have. And as I had mentioned, you can throw out all that out the window for California, and California would pretty much kind of match how the financial statement treatment would treat that, which is income on the debt forgiveness, and you are eligible for expensing the or deducting the expenses.
Great, thank you. There's still a lot of questions around the I'll call it the interim period, right? That, you know, you can't use the funds completely through 8 weeks, but you don't want to wait the full 24 weeks. And so someone noted, you know, the specific language from the final rules saying, you know, a borrower may submit a loan forgiveness application at any time on or before the maturity date of the loan, including before the end of the covered period, if the borrower has used all loan proceeds for which the borrower is requesting forgiveness. So I don't know. I thought we covered this pretty good on that question, but any other thoughts or insight on this?
Oh, I would say, if that is the language directly from the application, it would definitely run counter to what I said moments ago during the presentation. And I apologize if there was a lack of clarity there. I would, if the crowd would allow, I would love to be able to take a look at this one in more detail offline and make sure we post a correct and clear answer to the frequently asked questions on the website. Apologies again if there is any gray area with periods falling between 8 and 24 weeks.
Great, thank you. There was a question, Chris, about tax implications specifically. What are the tax implications for the forgiveness portion of the loan? From my understanding, it's not taxable, but at the same time, the expenses related to forgiveness is not deductible, netting to a potential taxable amount.
We covered that, but the key issue there is the way I would think about it is it's sort of tax neutral. So you do not have to pick up this is for federal purposes, the loan proceeds as income. And in exchange, you don't get to deduct expenses. And again, another way to think about that from a fairness standpoint is basically the government is giving you the money, and you're using their money to pay these expenses. And because you didn't use your own funds to do it, then you're not entitled to the deduction. So I would look at it more as a tax neutral situation where I don't have income for the receipt of the cash, but at the same time, I don't get to deduct the expenses either. So it's kind of a net push. And you just, you know, we're able to pay your employees with someone else's money.
Great, thank you. There was a question about the $15,000 cap on employee salaries and how choosing between the 8 weeks and the 24-week period would impact that cap. So I'm not sure if anyone has thoughts on that question.
Yeah, so so the audience is clear, it's not exactly $15,000, so don't search for a 15,000 number, but the cap is that it's $100,000 prorated over 8 weeks, which I think is high 14,000. That cap is essentially tripled. So as you go from 8 weeks to 24 weeks, the cap is still $100,000 per year. But the dollar amount does increase by a factor of three.
There was a question about someone who has interruption between June and July. So if they, you know, started some of the payroll costs, but then they had an interruption, I guess as long as they stay within the 24-week period, they're okay, or any comments on that? If their interruption is caused by the business, not, so this, in this case, it's a school that has, you know, it closes between June and July. So is there any issue with forgiveness based on that interruption?
As a school, it may be advantageous to look at the options available to seasonal employers. You know, most applications default to using one of two periods to calculate full-time equivalent and salary outlay. However, you know, agricultural entities primarily have very seasonal ups and downs with employment. So there is a provision at the borrower's option to use a comparison period that could probably be more favorable. So I would assume for a school whose operations shut down midway through the COVID period, that there would be a way to use a comparable period from the year earlier.
Great. I think one of the last questions we'll answer, and then we can respond to some of these are very technical, and we'll want to respond to them to the, as far as to each individual. But the last question, and I'm going to invite Elizabeth from Suncrest back on as we close out, is, you know, is Suncrest specifically, if you're a Suncrest customer, ready to receive applications? And I know they're targeting a mid to end of July time frame for when they're able to start receiving those applications. So as we close, Elizabeth can confirm that. But besides that, I want to thank our panelists, Ian, Jasleen, and Chris. You know, this has been a long, strange trip as far as the PPP forgiveness process, and we're still on the journey. So thank you for applying your expertise and knowledge in this space. It's really helpful, and I know there'll be more questions, but Ian, we can move to the closing slide. And I just want to thank the panelists. As I mentioned, we recorded this session, and we'll be available after this session for additional questions. Suncrest Bank, which you can see on the left, has a specific email address. If you'd like to, if you are a Suncrest customer and have a PPP forgiveness or PPP loan through Suncrest, you can email PPP_forgiveness@suncrestbank.com or visit suncrestbank.com for more information to connect with them. We did have questions that were submitted about HaneyBiz and the services that we offer to support PPP forgiveness. So we have had both our current clients that use our accounting services, as well as new clients that are using our PPP forgiveness flat rate package. So as you can see, as evidenced by this webinar, there's just a ton of technical details that continue to evolve. And so many businesses just don't have the bandwidth or the interest in becoming experts in this space. And so we have this flat rate package available to support you with our accounting team. So if you're interested in that, you can email me directly or visit our website, haneybiz.com, and find more information there. And then as we've referenced multiple times, this webinar, as well as the previous webinars, our PPP forgiveness checklist, and a summary of some frequently asked questions are on our dedicated website, haneybiz.com/PPP-forgiveness. So if you visit that site, you'll be able to, again, see the recorded webinars, as well as the PPP checklist and the frequently asked questions. So With that, I want to make sure Elizabeth from Suncrest Bank is available, and she can share some closing comments from Suncrest.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Rick. Thanks, Rick, Ian, everyone at Haney Biz, Chris, Jasleen, all this great content that we've had for the past three webinars. We really appreciate your expertise talking about the forgiveness. So as you mentioned, as a reminder, yeah, Suncrest is definitely committed to supporting all of our customers through this process, all the way through the conclusion of your forgiveness and accepting applications. Right now, we are currently putting some tools in place over the next couple of weeks that should help facilitate that process for you. And so as those become available, rest assured, we will definitely stay in close contact with you and let you know once we're ready to start accepting those. So you'll have all the resources that you need. We'll continue to email you just as you've been receiving information about the webinars. You'll continue to get those as well. And if you do have any questions about your PPP loan, specifically with Suncrest, you know, reach out to the email on the screen, ppp_forgiveness@suncrestbank.com. You can also always reach out to your banker or lender that you've been working with for any additional banking needs. If you're not a customer of Suncrest and you'd like to be, just go ahead and visit us on our website. We've got locations and contact info readily available. You can also follow us or check us out on social media with LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram. We share lots of stories and valuable information about small business success there. And yeah, it's just been great to host you, and hopefully you found a lot of value in this series. You know, if you're a customer of the bank already, you know that we, under normal circumstances, try to host a quarterly seminar called Local Matters, where we talk about subjects of importance for the small business community. And, you know, while we can't meet in person, there's no topic that is more important to our small business communities right now than recovering, both from a health perspective and economically. So again, hope you found some value, and continue to reach out with your questions, and thank you for attending.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. And again, thank you, Suncrest Bank, for your leadership and support of small businesses. With that, we'll conclude our webinar. Again, on the screen, you can see many ways to connect with us. We want to thank you for participating. Thank you for your patience as we used our expertise and knowledge to learn this very new and evolving process of PPP. So we're glad that you could participate, and we'll look forward to connecting with you, whether it be through this program or other programs in the future. So until we see you again, goodbye.